went very well to it, and we've gotten some good feedback. So that's next week. So therefore, we pulled forward this class to this week. What is new about this system that we use is that actually you probably see on top of your chat screen a little note that says translate. Translate, if you click that and you click the language that you're interested in translating into, it will translate into, let's say, Hebrew, and you can chat with us in Hebrew.
And you can have scratchy French if you want.
That's right. It's not a perfect system, but it's good enough, I think. I tried it. So that's something that you may want to try out, and you can check it out. So you can chat with us on the screen. Many of you already have figured out how to use that. There's a screen, and there's a chat button, and you press send, and you can ask us questions or comments. We like to take your questions and comments. We like to take your questions and comments, and we enjoy responding to whatever we can. So the topic we build as buying kosher foods in a non-kosher store, walking into a McDonald's to buy a soda or something to that effect. But we'll talk a little bit more about that. First, let's get to the second part, which was is it too good to be true to buy kosher frankfurters at a 7-Eleven? That was, it's sort of the same issue. The short answer is that...
Yes. It is too good.
It is.
If it's too good to be true,
it's too good to be true. So what happened was one of our local 7-Elevens, our new 7-Elevens, as our Rabbi Bayer pointed out, there's a 7-Eleven on every block now.
Yeah, we have an overabundance of 7-Elevens down in Baltimore.
So we've talked a little bit in the past about buying Slurpees, how you're allowed to, if you're allowed to.
Right.
You know, we have a webinar about that. If you're interested in that, you can look on our site, kosherclasses.org, and all the classes there are archived. Click on, I think, podcasts. Anyway, so we have a 7-Eleven that decided not only to sell Slurpees kosher, but also
hot dogs.
What they did originally was they put up, they have the roller with the hot dogs, and in front of that, they put the certification of the hot dogs themselves. So let's say they were under the OU, so they put up OU sign, or it was under some Hasidish Hechsher, they put up that certification sign. So people walk in, and they see the sign, and they see the hot dogs, and they figure that somebody is certifying the hot dogs, and they eat them. And the truth is that that's not reliable. Why? Because
who said
those hot dogs are being
the equipment.
How do we know that they weren't using the same equipment for non-kosher hot dogs and they're using it for kosher hot dogs? It's really not.
Maybe we should point out that these were, I think, from what I understand, these were mostly younger, like teenagers and things
who actually ate them.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know who ate them, but I know there were kosher observing people who went in there and ate it, assuming that it has the same level as everything else that they would be used to, and it clearly was not. So the 7-Eleven supervision came like this, that Rabbi Heinemann, who's our rabbinic supervisor, put out a letter saying that these hot dogs are under the 7-Eleven supervision in his inimitable way, saying that that's not something that a Torah observant Jew would want to use. So we tried to do what we could, and then we went in there the other day, and I'll show you. I'm going to change your screen around just a little bit, so bear with me here. Okay, I don't know if you can see what this.
Oh, was that taken with the secret camera you had there?
It's. I'm not sure how well it comes out on your screen. It's a cell phone. It's obviously not an iPhone.
Rabbi Goldberg, private eye.
So it says new kosher foods, and then on the left hand side there's a little picture of a hot dog, and behind it you can see some hot dogs, and so it's covering over that certification letter. So they did make some improvement to it, but
they're still claiming it's kosher.
They are still claiming that it's kosher when it is. when it's not according to our guidelines. So we're trying to see what we can do with it. You know, we don't have a very strong Maryland kosher law. We used to have a very strong kosher law, right. and then it was struck down in the courts. And now it's very weak. And it's not, New York, I believe, still has a pretty strong kosher law, except they have no enforcement.
Right, because the governor...
Right, the governor cut the budget right before he left.
Right.
And the new governor did not reinstate it. So, okay, but in New York, if you do bring it to the attention of the authorities, then there is someone who probably will be able to take some action with a fine or whatever. But
you did contact the 7-Eleven.
I contacted the 7-Eleven manager.
We did do regional that. Manager or something.
One of the rabbis here actually met with him.
Right, he was here in the office.
He came to meet with him, and then I followed up with him. But so far, we don't have a resolution to that. So, needless to say, that you're not allowed to go into a 7-Eleven.
Don't believe everything you read.
And buy a kosher hot dog. And, you know, it's not just in 7-Eleven.
What's interesting is that, and I don't mean to cut you off, but, you know, like in Lakewood, I think this is still the case. They actually have certified hot dogs.
Oh, really?
In the Exxon station there, on route, whatever it is, whatever the big main drag is there on Lakewood 9 or something like that, or Main Street on the Lakewood streets, but I'm pretty sure it's actually under supervision. So that's it is
possibility. You would have to have a full time mashgiach rabbi going in, or maybe the owner might
Wasn't
have to be.
Wasn't there actually an Exxon? There's an Exxon here in Baltimore that's owned by Jews, from Jews,
right?
Religious Jews, and I think they also at one
they
point
had some
had hot dogs. I think for a short time.
Okay, Route 9 and Country Line Road. Yaakov tells us. Thank
there you.
For everybody who wants to
head over. It's a free ad for them, but...
head over there.
Send them a bill later.
But it's not just in 7-Eleven you have to be careful. I was in Israel, and I was in Tiberias, and I went into a pizza store, and I saw a certification there of, it's a letter.
What's
that? Tuda. And it was a reliable certification, one that I would use, because there's some I would rely on, some I don't. And I was reading it, and it was a little bit away from me. I couldn't understand it exactly, but I said to the owner or the worker, I said, "So your store is under this certification?" He said, no. That's just the cheese that we buy for the pizza comes from there. The store, that's under this certification over here."
Did it say that on the letter? Or?
I read it again, and it just was a certification on cheese.
On cheese.
But it's easy to be confused by this,
yes,
because it's a letter with the rabbi's name, and
right,
you don't read it that carefully. So the lesson is always to be extremely
discerning,
careful. So yes. Zev says this is similar to the common practice of stores to post a certification letter prominently in their window, which really is a certification for a particular item.
Right.
See it often here in New York. Yes.
Right.
So it's something that a person wants to be aware of.
Correct. Yeah,
and
that's
got to be careful about that. In Israel, there are stores in the shuk, that's the marketplace, that have signs of five different hechsher.
Right.
Okay, you know, we could talk about Israeli kosher since I was there recently.
But that must be the reason. In other words, they're having
what they're doing
for
is
each product.
Sometimes what they do is they have an awning that has a sign of what's considered to be an extremely reliable certification. But the actual store is not under that certification. That's just some of the items they buy or they claim to buy. The other items in the store, or the whole store, is under somebody else's certification. So that's definitely something that you want to be careful about. You can really never be too careful. So
if it looks suspicious, you better
even if it doesn't look suspicious,
okay, be on your guard.
Careful. And sometimes you can't tell just because there are religious people sitting there and eating.
Right, that's the famous Aleph. And
right.
Whose hechsher is this? Everyone eats here.
Right, everyone eats there. It's not
what are you questioning
either, because some people, if let's say in this 7-Eleven, some boys went in, and other boys go in to buy a Slurpee, they see the first group eating hot dogs, they figure that it's okay. So,
mad mentality.
Zev says he met a collector with a letter, a Meshulach. And most people don't read the actual letter. He read the letter. It was a certification for an Esrom, for a Citron. So I think that tops. tops it. Okay, look, that's you got to be
definitely touched a lot. Got to be careful.
Yechiel Spear says this is a slippery slope of telling the Tzibur people that it's okay to purchase coffee in 7-Eleven. It's unfortunate during the era with an unprecedented number of kosher eateries that the Jews feel a need to buy a coffee in a non-kosher store. Okay, so I think there's something to what he's saying. That
yes.
how would somebody make such a mistake of going into such a store? It's only because
I understand
the Subway has a certification. And
I agree with what he's saying.
Has a certification,
the flip side to his argument, I think, may be that outside the greater New York metropolitan area, if you're in an out of town situation, there isn't that many, or there isn't that much kosher available. It's a way of showing people, of allowing people to keep kosher and realize that you don't really have to suffer that much. And other, so people who are in out of town situation, it makes it easier for them. That's all. That's the point I make.
Mm-hmm. That's what Yaakov says. In other words, he made the same point that you did.
Yeah.
And Lisa said the same thing. That seems to be a good point. So, okay. Just wanted to stop for some station identification. Mm-hmm. I'm Rabbi Tzvi Goldberg, and this is Rabbi Baruch Bayer on my right, and we're joined by Rabbi Zev Steen, who's the technical advisor over here, and we are at the Star K offices in Baltimore. If you'd like to chat with us, please feel free. I can see, actually, the computer, this advanced computer can tell that there are people from all over the world joining us. It looks like there's a couple of people in Eretz Yisrael or somewhere in the Middle East. It doesn't have exactly...
Saudi Arabia, according to the, according to the map.
It's not that exact. There are some people from Europe. Of course, there are people from New York and people from the West Coast and the Midwest as well.
Our Australian friend is not there today, it looks like.
Right. Last time we had a friend from Australia, he's not joining us. So we appreciate your presence. So right now, we're going to go to the second half of our presentation and ask Rabbi Mordechai Frankel to come. Please join us. Can Rabbi Bayer, would you mind sitting over there? It's a little bit off camera, but we can still be able to hear
problem.
You. Thank you, Rabbi Frankel, for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Rabbi Frankel is our esteemed colleague who's director of the Institute of Halacha at Star K. And Rabbi Frankel takes emails and calls with halacha questions in any area, not only kashrus. From all over the world in the afternoons, right? From
you can email anytime.
Email anytime and call
and also the
in the afternoon about 2 o'clock. Right? I didn't forget that. Rabbi Frankel is the assistant rabbi of the Aguda of Baltimore. Rabbi Moshe Heineman, who is our rabbinic administrator, is the rabbi there. So we're very glad to have you join us today. This is not your first time, and we're glad you came back. I see there's a number of comments here, but it looks like they're working it out on their own. So we'll that's good. Let's discuss the second part of our conversation, which is going into a non-kosher store and buying something that is actually kosher, not like the ersatz kosher hot dogs, but the something that's actually kosher, like a Coca-Cola,
a cup of coffee.
A cup of coffee.
The classic question is, could you go into McDonald's and get a cup of coffee?
Right. Depending, well, yeah. So,
or maybe in the summer.
Right. Let's first talk about a Coke, because the coffee, remember last time we spoke about the...
Yeah, we're only getting hot water with the coffee.
Okay.
We don't want to,
the coffee was an issue of how they prepare the coffee. We're just talking right now, we'll focus on going in and buying something that's definitely kosher, like a bottle of water. Right.
Okay.
Which water doesn't need any certification if it's unflavored. That is, yes, Yaakov is asking, aside from kashrus issues, is the problem of maris ayin when going into a McDonald's. That's a great segue. Did we set you up? We're not quite sure who Yaakov is.
Hire that guy.
But that is the perfect response, entrance into our next topic. So let's talk a little bit about what maris ayin is and how,
let's translate it first.
Set up the question for us, Rabbi Frankel.
What's translation of maris ayin?
The concept of maris ayin is that there are certain activities which a Jew is ostensibly allowed to engage in, but it doesn't look good. But the observer, the person who sees him, might suspect that he's doing something which is not permitted halachically. And within certain parameters and in certain situations, Chazal, our Rabbonim, and Talmud enacted this ruling of Marasayan that a person shouldn't do various activities which look like they're doing something wrong, even if technically they're not.
So the word Marasayan is, let's see, Maris means to
appearance.
Appearance, ayin to the eye,
right.
How it appears to the eye.
Right.
So if I'm not mistaken, there's two possible reasons why it would be a problem, right? One, that the person who's looking might be afraid, we might be afraid that he might or she might
copy
and do the same thing. And the other is that they see a Jew doing something they consider to be wrong, and that's
that's
Hashem or desecration of Hashem's name.
Right. That's an excellent point. It's sometimes, quite often, it's hard to distinguish in Chazal exactly what the reason is, whether it's a combination of both, one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But there are both of these potential problems that the person will see his friend doing it and assume it must be correct, and then he'll do it and he'll do something which is not correct.
Right.
Or that he'll look badly on the other person, even though, of course, the Torah says that a person should judge others favorably. But not all people are as generous as the Torah would like them to be.
Right. So, what's the classic case of Marasayan that will be brought down in the code of Jewish law?
There are a number of examples. One example is that a person is not allowed to wear wool and linen together because of sharpness. So in those times where silk looked very much like linen, so then a person is not meant to wear wool and silk together either, because to the observer, the silk and the linen look the same.
Does that still apply today?
No.
Does the shadness checker check for silk?
No, it does not apply today, because in those times silk was a rare commodity, and therefore the assumption would be that the person is not wearing silk. The assumption would be that the person is wearing wool and wearing shadness. Nowadays, the silk has become more common, more widespread. So the observer will, when he sees something, he won't necessarily assume that it's wool. He'll know that there's a possibility it could be silk. And that tells us an important rule about Marasayan, which is that it is subjective. It is open to the possibility of change, because again, the issue is not something which is intrinsically forbidden. It's that the Rabbana are concerned with the way the appearance of the way
so,
it looks.
So that goes into the issue of, let's say, non-dairy creamer.
Non-dairy
creamer,
right.
Which at the time, people thought it might have become a...
Or almond milk.
Or almond milk. Well, that's,
right,
that's even going further
that's
back.
The that's the case.
That's the case.
Of brought down in the
Shulchan Aruch.
With eating almond milk together with
chicken.
Right.
Or with meat.
With meat.
Right. If you take almonds and you boil them in water, then the water will turn cloudy and look like milk.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's really powerful, it's not
right.
Milk, and you could technically eat it with meat, but the observer will look and see and think that you're eating milk or meat.
But the point I was making is that it changes with time.
Right.
So I'm saying non-dairy creamer, when it first came out on the market, was it issued possibly, but now when it's become so prevalent,
now it's
Starkey opinion is that at a wedding, let's say, you can serve coffee with non-dairy creamer without having to put out
the box of creamer.
Right. I think like 30, 40 years ago there was...
Right, when it first came out. That's what I'm saying.
They had to put out the box of creamer.
Right. So people just backing up what he said about
right.
the
And
cheap,
almond
the
milk
cheap.
Is power as well. I had some this morning, power of almond milk.
Really?
It came back in style.
Very nice.
That you're putting out the...
Just an old-fashioned guy over the moment.
That you're putting out...
Preparation for the class.
For putting out the box of the creamers based on the fact that by the almond milk, so there, that's brought in Shulchan Aruch in the Code of Jewish Law, and there it says that if a person is going to serve this almond milk with meat, they should put some almonds
put some
next
almonds.
To the
right.
almond milk to clarify to the observer that this is almond milk. So therefore, by the same token, one would have to put out the creamer container, the box that it came in,
right.
So the person could see. But again, as Rabbi said, nowadays that's much less of an issue. There are a few holdouts, but the general consensus of Toskim is that nowadays there's no concern of Marasai, and the observer will know that that power of cream exists.
Right. Okay, so one of the commentators is asking, can we really make up our own Marasai, our own, how do we translate, our own concerns?
Rule laws regarding Marasai.
It's not a simple matter.
In other
words, so let's make the jump now to to going into a
modern times
to a non-kosher restaurant and buying something kosher.
So that's that observation, which the person made is a very 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 true observation. That if we're concerned about marriage science, then if you could make up your own marriage science, there's all sorts of things that might potentially not look good. It doesn't seem to be that a person can just, we can just make it up. Anything which is red, you can't eat because it looks like blood. You can't just make up your own marriage science, just the way it's generally understood. And
you mean like a red Slurpee?
Very good, Rabbi Goldberg. Trying to get it back on track here. Yeah.
Generally, that is the way it's understood. And this idea of the almond milk, which is quoted in the Shulchan Aruch, it comes from one of the Rishonim, the Rashba. And there were those who asked this question, how did he make up his own marriage science? And that's a valid question, and it does need an answer. But the bottom line is that this concept of the almond milk is codified. It is in the Shulchan Aruch, so it became part of the standard text of Jewish law. And it's not clear to how far it extends. You can't have almond milk. Presumably, it's nothing specific in almonds. You can't. The same thing would apply to creamer too. It would also be within the same paradigm of Marasayan, and possibly it extends to other foods as well. One could argue not, but there certainly is the possibility.
Right.
And
that would be the basis for saying you cannot go into a McDonald's.
Right.
To buy some kosher food. So we have a response from Rav Moshe Feinstein.
Right,
he wanted to bring up.
Right. So one could easily argue that one can't make up one's own marasayin, and therefore one should not extend it beyond the case of the almond milk or some of the things which are brought down. But we have this one shuvah from Moshe Feinstein. It's a short shuvah. He doesn't tell us too much, but he does say explicitly. He says that a person should not eat kosher food in a non-kosher place because of the maritime concerns. So it's clear that with Moshe Feinstein, at the very least, he seems to extend this maritime concern to food in general. That whenever it looks like a person's eating, just like if looking like you're eating meat and milk is a part of maritime, so looking like you're eating non-kosher food is also a part of maritime.
I just wanted to ask, so would Moshe differentiate possibly between actually eating in the restaurant and just going into the restaurant and taking something out, like a cup of coffee or a cup of soda or something like that?
Anything beyond that one paragraph that he writes is conjecture.
Mm-hmm.
But it's true that he talks about eating there. So it's certainly possible to argue that one should differentiate between eating there and just entering. On the other hand, one could equally well argue that if the concern is Marasayan, the person that sees you entering, well, why else do you enter a place? Generally, people enter McDonald's to buy something, so therefore maybe the Marasayan does extend to that as well. It's not so clear, but generally it's understood that person should.
Moshe says it is a problem, but then he has a leniency as well.
Right. He does say that Marasayan, since it's not the act itself is not intrinsically forbidden, it's just because it doesn't look good. So he brings proofs that if a person is going to have a great loss because of that, or a person is in pain, that the Rabban did not extend this prohibition because of Marasayan that far. The person shouldn't do it if there's no need. But if there is need, again, it's not something which is intrinsically wrong. If there is a need to do it because the person is suffering, the person is in pain, or the person is going to have some financial loss, so then Moshe says that it would be
one of the reasons why we brought up this topic at this time was because people are traveling now, and the thought was, if someone's on the road and there's nothing else available, would that put them in a situation where they would be allowed to?
Well, we have to distinguish between two cases. You're on the road and you're in a rest stop, and you want to go into the rest stop and buy a soda or something.
Different.
That's one case. The other case is you're traveling
within the city,
within the city limits, and there you want to go into a,
and your kids are very thirsty, and
right,
you've been on the road.
So let's ask,
can you go into the McDonald's, or you need to
let's
use,
get the bottom line,
right, or you need to use
start
the
opinion
did,
on that,
which I think Mordechai addressed.
Right. So as we mentioned, Marasayan is a concern if it's something which is not normal to do. as you said, as Rabbi said nowadays, that it's normal to use dairy creamer. There's no concern about sign. Generally, it's considered that it's a normal thing that when people are driving on the highway, they're driving far distances, a person wants to stop and get a drink, and a person stops at a rest stop. It's not if a person sees an Orthodox Jew in a rest stop buying a drink, no one's going to have any raised eyebrows about that. It's nothing which is out of the ordinary.
Or to use the facilities.
Use the facilities, right. Again, you know, that's...
That doesn't seem to be a problem.
That doesn't seem to be a problem. The concern is more if I'm in my city, especially if I'm in my place where there are other from place eateries available. So he sees me walking into a non-kosher place, so that looks strange. Why am I walking into a non-kosher place if there's a kosher place next door? That's where the Mara sign is going to be much more of a concern.
Okay, I just put up the source for this response from Moshe. It's on the chat. It's in Archaim, second Chelik, chapter 40.
I think it's important to mention that Rav Moshe does again say that in cases of necessity, in cases of loss, a person is allowed to do it, which is very relevant because there are a lot of people who see clients and they do business, and part of the job is to go and take clients out to eat, and that's part of their work, and that's their expectation.
So they go into a non-kosher restaurant,
right?
And they just sit, or they order a Coke.
Right. And again, Rav Moshe would say that if the job necessitates that, so the person then, and there's going to be financial loss if the person doesn't do that, so then a person would be announced.
So ideally, would you agree that he should try to get his business done in the kosher restaurant? There's enough high-end kosher restaurants in many cities that you're able to. In New York, at least, for
again,
sure.
As you mentioned before, there's definitely going to be a difference between that and the out-of-town
places. Right. But if you can do that, that would be ideal. If you can get them to go to your...
And you can eat too.
Right, but if you can't do that, so then there is a leniency for business purposes to go into such a place. I often wonder, is it better to leave on, if you're a man and you have a yarmulke, is it better to leave that on? Or take it off, perhaps, so people shouldn't see that you are...
I think that the way, perhaps, rather than take off the yarmulke, I would suggest to keep it on and rather come tied in such a way that it's clear that you're coming for a business meeting. The person comes with a briefcase, so then everyone sees you walking with a briefcase, it's understood that you're not coming.
Bring your laptop.
That's the way, if you're... very often people have name tags, you know, if you come with something like that, it's obvious to everyone that you're coming in for some kinds of job.
Okay, so that's some very good practical advice. Let's take some of these comments so we can let's get back to some of these comments. Okay, so Yechiel Spear has a website, Jerusalem Kosher. Okay, yes, I've had some contact with Rabbi Yechiel. He runs a very nice website about kosher in Jerusalem. I think it's called Jerusalem Kosher News. I'm not sure exactly. And thank you for joining us. Business meetings, Happy Not Kosher Place. I think we covered that. Okay, if someone sees you walking into a McDonald's, you'll have problems with a shidduch. Okay, you'll have problems either finding a proper marriage partner.
Perhaps we should add, Moshe does say, this is a point we didn't make, and this brings it out, Moshe does say that even in a situation where a person is allowed to go in, again, if there's a case of a person, the case he's talking about is when a person is very hungry and a person is in pain, even in a case where a person is allowed to go in, he says clearly that if you look around and you see people, other you know, Orthodox people there, then you should tell them before you go in, and you should explain to them, I'm just going in to use the facilities, I'm just going in to buy a Coke or something like that. So
he tried to explain to people, so they'll
if there's a concern that people
we're in the 3 weeks now, what happened to Dan the Katzchus?
What about a business meeting in a non-kosher restaurant where kosher food is double wrapped and brought for the kosher people? Okay, well, that goes back. We can ask the question in the following way: is it better for him to eat or not to eat?
Not to eat, right?
Would it be better for him to eat something or just to sit and just drink.
I would think that if it's not going to affect his business, it would be
better not to eat. Because someone coming after he opens up his wrapper doesn't necessarily see.
But
that
if he feels that that will affect the success of the business meeting, he's not eating. So then perhaps that would be different.
Right. Presumably, there's no issue of eating in a food court shared by many non-kosher eateries.
Right.
If there's a kosher eatery there and you're sitting, one of them is kosher.
That's probably like the highway, like the rest stop.
People understand that you get your food from somewhere.
People
kosher
understand
food.
That,
right.
That people are just sitting down there in the middle. You can bring your own. Very often at those places, you could bring your own food and sit down there. So you know those places, you go to a picnic site, you could buy food from the place, or you could bring it. You go to a cafeteria, you can bring your own food and sit down. There's no particular reason that people would even assume that you bought the food there.
Okay, so can one get an alcoholic drink in a non-kosher restaurant if you check the bottle before the bartender pours it?
Why are you at a non-kosher bar? Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, a non-kosher restaurant, you're buying an alcoholic drink. You have a few problems buying an alcoholic drink. If it's wine and it's not mevushel, not cooked wine, then you have a problem buying it in any event, but because it needs to be handled in a special way. But let's say it's something that doesn't have that issue. So the bottom line is we think that that's not recommended. A glass in a non-kosher restaurant is still a problem. They regularly rewash and reuse within 24 hours. Well, the glass, if it's just a glass and you're drinking cold water
or something like that,
cold drinks in it, then that's not a problem because it's a temporary use and you're permitted to do that. I mean, people
with glass.
I mean, they do that when they go on dates, getting back to the shidduch. You go to a hotel or
everything
or
gets back to
lounge, and you have a drink of Coca-Cola, and that's that you're using their utensils. That's not a problem. Okay. Rabbi Chiel says he would add in his opinion that Rabbi Moshe wrote that tshuva was 40 years ago. There were almost no kosher restaurants. Today, there are many, many kosher restaurants, from what I'm told. Yes, that's I think we are on the same page, more or less, right? That a person should try to go to get a meeting in a kosher restaurant, but that's not always.
We were saying if you don't really have a choice, you should.
Right.
You know, it's true that in 40 years there are more kosher restaurants, but also I think in 40 years there's much more business interactions, like which take place over meals.
The need became greater.
And when you're traveling, it's still traveling. There still isn't much out there.
For purposes of Kir V'chokim, can you take students to an ice cream store where most of it is kosher? Okay, so there, I'm not even sure that you need to. She's saying this is a situation of need. I don't even know if you need that requirement of need because you are doing. You're trying to bring others closer to Judaism. Just if you walk in yourself, we think Star K policy is, let's say, in an ice cream store that sells kosher ice cream. We allow you to go in as long as you take certain care.
Right, like a Baskin Robbins or one of these types of.
Baskin Robbins, most of it.
The ice cream is kosher.
We allow. The problem is that some of them are non-kosher. You have to worry about the scoopers. That's a separate issue which you would discuss on separate occasions, but it's not a Maris Ayin problem. It's not a problem that people will say that you're buying something non-kosher. Why should they assume that you're buying something non-kosher when 98% of it is kosher? Agree? Yeah. Okay, Lori says she's talking about vodka and rum when she talks about going into a bar and buying some drinks. There are no kosher bars in her area.
I mean, as opposed to wine, is what she's saying.
As opposed to wine,
because there's no kosher bars, so she needs to go to a non-kosher bar.
Right. Related to the question, most Baskin Robbins nowadays are in a shared establishment with Subway. They are? And therefore, people might think that you're going in to buy the hamburgers or the whatever they sell?
Well, it depends on whatever the norm is.
It's hard for us to
say. Yeah, whatever's the norm in that community, in that place. You know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. But we have a couple of.
That's a good point.
We have a couple of.
That's a great. Rev Zev just raised this issue that a lot of people go to the local here in Baltimore.
Right.
Chuck E. Cheese's.
Chuck E. Cheese?
Chuck E. Cheese is a pizza shop.
Okay.
But a large part of the shop is given over to like an indoor playground for kids.
Ah.
So a lot of people go to the restaurant, to the place.
They'll take their kids there.
Right, they can't.
Okay. Well, so that's, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think at least in Baltimore it's well known that...
That's where you're going.
Right. It's most, you know, a lot of people maybe go in for that purpose.
Right, especially if you have some kids with you.
I mean, they charge for that too. It's not the playground. It's not...
I've never been there.
Yeah,
you can either pay to buy food or you can pay to use their rides or whatever they have there.
Uh-huh.
So that's one of the, you know... They have to, it's like a place which has two businesses. You're going in for the other business.
Okay, we did get some email questions, and I'd like to try to see if we can get to those. Can I buy kosher bagels at a store that is reselling them? Like, for instance, H&H bagels sold at other stores. Does it help if there's only bagels that a store sells? I think it would need some sort of certification.
Bagels are sold loose.
They're sold loose, I guess. That's his question.
Right.
They're sold loose out of a package. They would need to have a certification that some rabbinic authority is checking up to make sure that that's what you're getting. Otherwise, you can't really assume that. You'd have to know for yourself, or you'd have to have a mashgiach.
Or if it comes packaged.
Right. Okay.
How about if they show you the package?
If they show you the package,
show you the box where it comes from, is that enough?
I'm not sure.
Ask your local.
Unless they're contracted to buy from there, I'm not sure that I would be so comfortable with that. Soda rest stops at McDonald's not the same issue as the Starbucks coffee?
Not at all the same issue.
No, the Starbucks coffee issue, which we discussed, is the issue that they're
washing the... It's first of all, Starbucks coffee is served hot, right, generally speaking. And it's an issue of that the utensils that are being used to make the coffee are also being washed together with utensils that were used to serve non-kosher meat. So that's an actual, you know, kosher problem. The issue that you have with fountain sodas, or Slurpees for that matter, is whether or not the syrup that's being used is a kosher syrup. It's not an equipment question.
In our context, the problem is going into the McDonald's is people will think that you're buying something non-kosher.
Okay, well then we discussed that.
I don't think
he's bringing up the issue of from that perspective. You're saying
walking into
a Starbucks that serves on kosher, is that a problem?
Maybe he means. I mean, I think according to the context was saying that Starbucks wouldn't be a problem.
We once asked Rabbi Hanneman this question, I think, specifically about 10 years ago, about going into coffee shops and things, and I think he said that if the place is basically mainly set up to serve coffee,
so you don't have a problem. People will think that you're buying
non-kosher. You walk into McDonald's, it's mainly set up to serve hamburgers.
As well as the question wanted to know about the utensils, there is this fundamental difference between hot and cold, that if the utensil has been used in the past with non-kosher, so then using it with hot is going to be a problem. Using it for a cold soda for one off time, assuming it was clean, it's not a problem.
Right. So that then we have some other questions. I don't think that we're able to get to those. Okay. I think we'll, unless we have some last minute questions, you can chat with us. We're going to thank you for joining us. Again, we're here the last Wednesday, usually the last Wednesday of every month. Not this month, but in general,
last month.
And not last month.
But next
month, God willing, we'll be here the last Wednesday at noon. And if you want to sign up for to be notified of the classes, they can send an email to where is that? Where they can sign up? Where they go to the alerts? Remind me.
Alerts are good then.
Okay, so if you go to star-k.org and you click your way through to the alerts, and you sign up for the alerts, you will be alerted about this class and about everything else that
Star-K related
wants to alert you to. And I think that's a good idea in general, even without this class. You know, a person has to be proactive in kosher. You can't always assume that everything is going to remain the same. I think it's a good idea to sign up for the various alerts that are out there, so you can keep on top of it. Okay, we have, I guess there are no more comments here because people are thanking us, and we want to thank you for joining us, taking your time out of your busy day to come and be with us. Thank you, Rabbi Frankel, again. Yeah, as always, it's very enlightening. Rabbi Bayer, thank you. And thank you, Reb Zev, for running the technical aspects. And we look forward to seeing you next time. This class and all our classes are archived at kosherclasses.org. Zev, you want to put that up? kosherclasses.org. And you can click on, I think, podcast over there, and you can view this and all our other classes. Zev usually has it up in a couple of days, so just give us some time to put it up over there. Thanks again, and have a great day. Take care.